Well, hello. I am Pastor Joe.
And I'm Pastor Josh.
And you are listening to another episode of Laundry, Yard Work, and Jesus. And it has been a good week so far, and I am really excited to be getting into this because today we're talking about anxiety.
Bum, bum, bum.
I know. See, I'm trying to tackle this with enthusiasm. That way my anxieties about this don't actually shine through. That was a joke that nobody laughed at. Now I've called it out, which makes it twice as bad. So
hey, you don't know if nobody laughed. We have no idea about that.
You didn't laugh.
I chuckled.
You did not chuckle. You're inside. A liar. And you sit inside on a throne of lies. Oh, got him laughing 30 seconds in. See, there we go. Use my non-humor to bring something about. So today, since we're talking about anxiety, and anxiety is ultimately rooted in fears, we thought it would be fun, audible question mark, to talk about some of our childhood fears to kind of get things going. So Josh, what were you afraid of most? Like, if you were going to power rank your top fears, what stuck with you?
I don't know if my parents would agree with this, but as a child, I remember the thing that freaked me out the most, the concept that freaked me out the most.
Yeah.
Vampires.
I love vampires.
Vampires. To this day, I'm still freaked out by the concept of vampires.
My favorite monster.
Of course it is. You are a monster.
Yes.
It all started with Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
The vampire episode freaked me out as a child. I remember at nighttime, I still get freaked out. And then I went with my brother and one of his friends' parents. It was one of those deals where, you know, my parents shipped me off with my brother's friends. And we went and saw My Little Vampire.
I think
it's a movie from the 90s or whatever. Freaked me out. That thing messed me up. That vampire sneaking into a room at nighttime. Yeah, I remember going to bed at night, covering my entire neck up to my ears, thinking, please don't hurt me. So yeah, that was my childhood fear.
I liked vampires. I still like vampires. I can power rank top vampire material that we can watch through and go through sometime.
Considering I've become known as a Bigfoot guy, I have no place to stand on this argument.
You do
so, more power to you.
I can tell you. I can tell you. They made some Castlevania Symphony of the Night. I play every Halloween. Played through it. It's like a tradition, and it's such a good game. There aren't any good Bigfoot games other than Monster Truck games.
There's not, but there's tons of great documentaries. I can hook you up, bud.
So for me, kind of similar on a monster theme, kind of a weird thing. So I am just old enough to remember when TV channels would go off the air, or you had to be on channel 3 in order to get everything to work on your TV. And if you were on any other channel, or if you stayed up once the public access channels went off, it would turn to static. They would sign off. They would play the national anthem with an American flag floating. I was a military kid. I don't know if this was the way it was everywhere, but on our bases, this was what the public access did. And then they would say, signing off, see you in the morning or whatever. And then it would cut. There would be a static screen for like an American flag, and then it would cut to static. And for some reason, and I don't know why, like I think this happened in Poltergeist, but I never watched Poltergeist. I certainly didn't by this age. And I would always be afraid, like, there's static, there's nothing, it's just kind of, you know, fuzzy. Do you know what static is?
Yes.
Static TV? Okay,
yes.
Good. Just making sure.
I'm aware.
Just having an age check there, generation check.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always afraid that someone was going to come in the static. Like, there's not supposed to be something there, and then all of a sudden there'd be someone's face there. Wasn't so much worried about someone coming out of the screen, just as someone being there that wasn't supposed to be there. And even to this day, sometimes I'll be like, if I'm just, you know, passed out on the couch instead of going to bed like a intelligent human being.
Mm-hmm.
You guys do this too. Don't judge me. Sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I look out the window just to make sure there's nothing there. And I'll just kind of wait for a second just to make sure that nothing is there. Not something that I notice, but just so I like things being the way they should be. Things being out of place like that, that was always a fear.
I'm just impressed that you actually look out the window, because when the sun goes down, my windows get covered up and no one could see
the
in.
Garlic gets hung out, the crosses get put up on the windowsills.
Let's just say there's always minced garlic at my house.
Nice.
For cooking and other purposes.
Very, very nice. So, you know, the reason we could talk about this, we didn't even talk about what our fears were going to be because we had fears. Every child has fears. And if we're honest, every adult has fears. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when those fears take on like an outsized place in our lives, it can create anxiety. And that's something we're probably all familiar with, that sensation, that feeling. We're all probably familiar with it, just maybe to different degrees at different times and different seasons in our life. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no, that is something that is common to life in a broken world, our fear and anxiety, and we're never going to escape it. But as people who trust the Lord and who look to Him, He speaks into that. And I love that the Bible, you know, there's that whole thing. I've never actually like fact checked this, but, you know, the Bible has do not fear 366 times in it or something. And the whole thing is always God knew we were so fearful that He even gave us one for a leap year.
So side note on that, mm-hmm. I understand that would probably be easy to do now in a digital world, mm-hmm. but those kind of facts have been around for ever. I've seen them in books that were published like in the 50s. So like, who sat around and decided they were going to count? I want to know how many times fear is mentioned in the Bible. And so they just read through the entire Bible, mm-hmm. pointing out the fear verse. Like that's some dedication.
It is dedication.
Or they just totally made it up.
Which is why I said, I've never fact checked this, but man, it sounds good when you say it.
It does. So,
but I do think that principle is still true, that the Lord knows we're fearful. The Lord knows those things. And so He speaks into that. And as parents, it's going to be true for us and our kids. And we've got to know, how do we navigate that in faith?
Yeah, absolutely. This is, if you're a parent, this is something you're going to have to deal with. A child who either is just going through a period of fear, anxiety, or someone who has a prolonged season of anxiety where this is something that they are going to be wrestling with. And it's really your job as a parent to kind of help them, which can sometimes be difficult to do because as was pointed out to me at a conference I recently went to, is that a lot of times children who have anxiety also have parents that have anxiety. It's not always true, but it is often true. So while you're trying to work through your own anxieties, possibly about parenting, to try to help coach your kids through these seasons of anxiety, it can be a very tricky thing to do.
Well, and it's even more tricky because when we see, at least this has been true of my experience, when I see my kids walking through fear and anxiety, it only makes me fearful and anxious for them because I don't want them to feel that way. I don't want them to walk through life like that. But how do I help it? How do I stop it? You know, and I think those type of things can create a storm in our souls as parents that end up just making things worse for our kids sometimes.
It can. It can. Certainly doesn't make things easier for us.
Definitely.
So let's kind of lay some groundwork here. So we're going to be looking again. We're working through Childproof, Julie Lowe's book. And so we're dealing with chapter 8 today on parenting an anxious child. It's kind of going to be the launching point we have. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about anxiety, she describes it as a particular fear that could be, it could be real or imagined, that has an outsized place. It's kind of blown out of proportion. I'm kind of using some shorthand and summing up a little bit. Yeah. So kind of for instance, she uses an example of someone who's scared of their parents dying, mm-hmm. which would be a natural thing. If a child sat around and thought about one of their parents passing away, that could be something that would cause them fear, cause them anxiety, having a hard time sleeping, having a hard time focusing in school, being extra clingy, not being quite willing to step out and to do normal child things because their parents are afraid. Well, that's a legitimate fear. However, if you're healthy, then while it's possible that your child might have to deal with the death of a parent, it's not likely and really shouldn't dictate their day.
Yeah.
Shouldn't dictate their lives. So sometimes there's fears of like just random bugs or TV static people showing up that are completely, you know, unfounded. But sometimes these are real fears or based off of real incidents that have too much of a control in our lives.
Yeah. And I think that's helpful for us to look at, because we live in a world where anxiety has kind of become this buzzword, you know, and
particularly since COVID.
Yeah, particularly since then. And we need to know how to define that well, because there are times that you're just scared, and that's okay, but you're not necessarily anxious, and or anxiety has not set in, rather, might be a good way to say that. And I think it's helpful to define those terms, especially if we're going to try and walk our kids and our teenagers through that, because they need to be able to define those terms.
Right. And as we're defining terms and helping, so part of it sounds like we're saying is to help our kids, however old they are, to kind of keep things in perspective, mm-hmm. to figure out a perspective on life and on certain circumstances, and to see that maybe this fear or this potential future or maybe this thing. So when we're not anxious about something you're doing currently, usually it's something about the future, right? Even folks who are anxious about taking tests, usually it's not the specific question they're on in the test. It's they can't help shake the fear that they're going to fail the test and what that might mean for them and their family or whatnot. Yeah. So a lot of times it seems like anxiety is really about control or our lack of control.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is true. I often like to say it's this what if storm or tornado that shows up. It's just these series of what if questions that we may state, we might not, and we just start to think about what if this happens, what if that happens, and before we know it, we are anxious and tore up over things that may never happen at all. But that's where we are.
Very similar to being mad at someone, working over a scenario in your head. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done this where you know you've got a potential conversation coming up, and so you're anxious about it, and you think it through in your head, and you do it for hours and hours and hours, and then you end up mad at a response that someone has about a conversation that's never even actually happened?
That's right. Yeah.
You know, anxiety kind of works a little bit like that sometimes.
Exactly.
By the way, when we're talking about anxiety, we're talking broadly based off of this book and based off our experiences. Neither of us are trained clinical psychologists or counselors.
Yeah, and that is a good thing for us to state. But also, just transparently, as a parent, this is something that I know I have walked through.
Oh, absolutely.
And quite frankly, I feel like I have failed through it more than I've succeeded. And it is something that to this day I'm learning. How do I walk by faith in this, not react in my own fears and anxieties? And I think we have to come at this with a perspective. We are all people at the foot of the cross seeking to trust the Lord through it.
Yeah. And I really think that faith is and God is the answer, and trust in his sovereign goodness and love. You know, the Bible tells us to cast all of our cares on him, for he cares for us. So I always think of it as, I would describe this with kids, is that it's like, you know, when you get home from school and you got that loaded book bag, I don't know hardly any kids that come home from school and they're excited to come home, and they very nicely walk over to the place where they're supposed to and hang their backpack up and gently get their books out. I never did that. It's come home, whew, glad to be here, throw the book bag across the room, lands where it lands, hopefully it didn't hit the cat, throw my shoes off, and then I have to be told later to put it up nicely. But it's that feeling of freedom. I'm home. I made it. I can get rid of this now. And that's what God really thinks wants for us when we're dealing with these difficulties and we have these anxieties, is to realize, take him home. You got a father who cares for you. Cast him off. Get rid of that. He'll deal with that. I get to rest.
Yeah. No, and I think that is helpful. And so as we go about this notion of how do we walk by faith in anxiety, both as parents, but lead our kids through that. One of the things that she mentions in the book that I found particularly helpful is this idea of a parent's comfort versus God's comfort.
Yeah.
And she kind of walks through this notion of, so often when we see our kids in fear, we see our kids anxious, we want to help and we want to rescue them from that. And we want to find different ways that we can fix our kids, so to speak.
Yeah.
And what she argues for is that oftentimes if we're not careful, the approach we take only ends up giving them more reasons to maintain their fears, not actually get rid of them. And what she argues, and I think is a powerful thing, is we need to be pointing them to the one who can walk with them where we cannot go, who can read the thoughts that we cannot read, and who can convict a heart that we have no ability to convict. And so for a lot of us, going back to what you said earlier, this is a surrender of control as parents to lead them to Jesus, knowing he can do in their life what we never could.
Right. And there is a sense in which, you know, as a parent, as a father, my love for my kids is supposed to mimic and initiate their understanding of God's love for them. In other words, if I'm doing my job right, then there should be a sense that whenever we talk about God, you know, when I talk with my kids about God loves you, or when we point our kids and say, hey, God, you know, God has this. He has a love for you. He's a father to you. They should have an idea of what that looks like because of the way that I've loved them, which is one of the reasons why whenever you have broken families or you have so many people have, you know, who've had abusive fathers, it makes it difficult. I'm speaking from experience sometimes, you know, if you have an abusive father, it can be difficult to comprehend God's love for you. So there's a sense in which, you know, being there for them is fine, but there's also, like you said, but it's something that's supposed to point us to God. Our presence and the way that we comfort our kids shouldn't end with us. It should be pointing them toward God, because there's no situation where he's hopeless. There's no situation where he's out of control. There's no situation where he won't be there for them, whereas all too often we're frail. Or weak, or we handle it wrong. And it might be coming in time when talking to us is the cause of anxiety for their lives. Mm-hmm. So they need to be able to talk to God about how to talk to us.
Yeah. And you know, I don't think we want to simplify this to say that doesn't mean that there's never a time that you should be looking for counseling or, you know, therapy and those type of things. I love it in the book. She talks about we need to use parental wisdom in knowing what our kids need. And oftentimes, leading them to Jesus is being able to admit the humility of, I need help. And so I want to make sure you hear that as well, that there are times when help, leading them to Jesus is, hey, we got to get some help here because we can't fix this on our own. But as long as we're walking through this in faith, I think we can trust that God is working through it to do more than what we would ever give ourselves.
Absolutely.
And I
can even say, as most of the Christian counselors that I've talked to seek counseling, if you go to a good counselor, a good biblical-based counselor, they see their role as discipleship, not necessarily as like long-term care, but the idea is to help apply faith and help people work through their issues so they can see God in a proper light and see themselves in a proper light and go back to having a functioning life.
Yeah.
You know, that's a discipleship thing. So as we go, and there are, you know, a lot of issues that you can deal with, and this isn't necessarily another thing we're not saying is throw a bumper sticker or a Bible verse on it and everything's going to be fine, but there are truths that we need to cling to because Satan's number one weapon is a lie. Fear is a liar. Satan is a liar, the father of lies. But we have a God who tells us the truth, and so one of the things that Miss Lowe finishes her chapter really well on is just a series of kind of common lies that we believe encountered with truth, biblical statements backed with scripture that are helpful for us to remember as we move forward.
Yeah, and you know, before we kind of look at those, I think it's helpful to know leading our kids to the truth of what God says, it matters, particularly for teenagers who want to let anxiety become their identity, who want to let their lives be defined by this unbeatable anxiety in their life.
Yeah, So many, I'm trying to get you off, but so many teens and even like young adults in particular, like if they weren't anxious or nervous about something, they don't know what to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, that's all they say. And part of that goes to something you've talked about beforehand. And sorry, I cut you off, but I'm now right. What the messages we receive, you know, Satan is a liar, so he delivers us through messages. And so what messages we receive and what media we consume really matters.
Yeah. And the being able to speak the truth into the lie is a step of faith that we need as all believers, whether you are 8, 18, or 68. That's a step of faith we all need to know how to make. And the more that we can point our teenagers, our kids, to the fact that, no, you're not defined by these fears you have. You're not defined by anxiety, but you're defined by Jesus. You find your true self in what he says is true about you. And that's not something that's always easy, but when we look in Scripture, oftentimes God starts with who we are before he tells us what to do. And we often get those flipped, but we need that if we're going to be set free from this crippling anxiety that so many of us just live with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just kind of coming way, 13 ways you can give kids comfort. It's just to remind them that they are not alone.
Mm-hmm. Remind them that they have value.
Right. That God sees their tears and their sufferings.
Don't let them forget that there is help.
And yeah, life has purpose, that there's an end goal for them. They have a reason for being here.
Yeah. And not to lose sight of the fact that what they're walking through, it's temporary.
Yeah, that's a really big deal. Mm. That's a really big deal. I know talking with older kids and teenagers in particular is a lot of times their current situation, like going through a relationship trouble, or someone's going, you know, someone's dating, you know, they had their heart broken, they had a crush that was broken, they're like, oh, this is done, this is pointless, I wasn't good enough for this person. Like, you're 12, you got 70 more years. There's more, you know?
Yeah.
And there's always a way out, you know? Anytime you're in a situation, there is a way out. There is something, a way to get somewhere positive.
Yeah. And I think this is a big truth that she lists here, is that you are more than your outward appearance. We so often just want to see the physical, but God looks so much deeper, and there's so much more value in what we can see.
Absolutely, absolutely. That you can't imagine what good lies in store for you. A lot of times when folks have anxiety, they have a hard time remembering the good days of the past or imagining that those good days can come back again. I always like to say that if you're a Christian, that any suffering you're going through has an expiration date. It's only going to last for so long. It's a season. Even if that's a long season and doesn't get fixed till you get to heaven, in the scheme of eternity, everything's for a season.
Just to add on to that, I don't know if I mentioned this on here before, but a few years ago, I had to meet with what he called himself, a discipleship counselor. And I remember walking through Romans, and one of the truths that just stuck out to me, and it's held true in every book of the Bible, is this constant call to believe that the best is yet to come. And when I'm walking through fear, when I'm walking through those difficulties, it's always a reminder for me that the best is yet to come. And that's just a biblical truth that we have to cling to and teach our kids to cling to. So I love that. And on top of that, this next truth goes along with it. It says, you will not always feel this way. Those feelings are temporary. They will pass.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what won't pass is that you're greatly loved.
Mm.
That God loves you with a love that you can't possibly comprehend. I don't know where I picked this phrase up, but a lot of times when I pray, I'll just pray over kids, like on Wednesday nights or whatnot. I'll say, just remind people, like, God has loved us first, and he's loved us best. And
that's good.
It doesn't end.
Yeah, that's really good. And on top of that, we can remind our kids that they will not be put to shame. You know, shame is such a powerful thing. But I love that when we look to Jesus, we're reminded he bore our shame. He took all of that on himself. And none of it is bigger than what he went through.
Absolutely. And God went through it. And, you know, like it says in Romans, that God, who didn't spare his own son, is not going to withhold from us any good thing. God is up for good, up to good in our lives, even when we can't see it. And that's actually a good thing. I mean, so many great things in my life have come out of very difficult situations. And I never would have chosen the difficult situations. But in hindsight, I'm glad I went through them.
Yeah.
And God had that wisdom, even if I didn't. So
that's good.
Just some truths to think through and remember, that we can remind ourselves. These are good for us on top of our kids, to help have the right kind of perspective.
Yeah. And as the late Richard Blackaby wrote, we never need to lose sight that God is always at work. And as you finish out your day and go about whatever else you have to do, it's our prayer that you would let these truths both be an encouragement to you, but also tell them to your kids. Walk them through that. Help them know they're not alone and that God can speak into their fears, into their anxieties. And if it's helpful, we would love to have a conversation with you. We'd love to pray with you and your kids as they walk through those things. We're here for you, and we will continue praying for you. But for now, we will say goodbye.
Bye.
And we look forward to another episode with you very soon.